Live from our nation's capital, it's the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Your host, Mark Levine, reporting live from Alexandria, Virginia, just across the river from Washington, D.C., where I'm in my home and carefully socially distancing myself from everyone else, as hopefully you are. Didn't social distance too much yesterday. I was down in Richmond, Virginia, the capital of Virginia, where I serve as a state representative. We call them delegates in Virginia, the Virginia House of Delegates. And we voted on a number of budget and policy priorities. If I get some time, I will devote the end of the show to letting you know a little bit about what happened in Virginia. But I'm home now, safe, I think, corona-free. I think this disease takes 4 days or so to incubate, but I was careful. I wore my mask. I stayed 6 feet away from my colleagues. But, you know, you're in a confined setting for 10 hours, and who knows? I will say this, kudos to our Speaker of the House. The Speaker of the Virginia House's name is Delegate Eileen Fillercorn. She didn't put us in the Capitol where we normally would sit and where probably Virginians have sat for 100 years. She put us outside the Capitol with a tent structure over our heads to allow air to flow more freely, which hopefully means that all of us arrived there and came home safe. While we were there in the session in Virginia, the entire block around the Capitol was filled with people in cars and trucks honking horns. Apparently, it was a protest to protest what exactly? To protest their people not being able to be socially connected to each other. And part of what I want to examine this time, and I hate to give the protesters too much credit. To be clear, they didn't disrupt our business. They blew their horns. We could hear it in the distance, much like you might hear it in a New York City skyscraper, right? This sort of din of traffic. But it didn't stop our business. And frankly, we barely noticed them. But I do think it's important to ask who these people are and what their agenda is. It does appear to be an astroturf movement. In other words, where a bunch of very rich people are funneling a bunch of misinformation on Facebook, on Fox News, getting people to believe in it, still doesn't seem to have that major following yet. But we'll get back to that in a minute. Let me start with the American Revolution. Patrick Henry, former governor of Virginia, by the way, great American patriot, famously said, "Give me liberty or give me death. Give me liberty or give me death." In a fiery speech, pamphlet? I don't remember. I think it was a speech, probably at the Virginia House of Burgesses, which is what the Virginia House of Delegates was called before I was elected a few 300 years or so before I was elected. But give me liberty or give me death. What was he saying in that fiery rhetoric? He was saying, look, I want to be free. I want to be free of those British tyrants that are ruling over us. And if we can't be free, if we can't have representation, then we're willing to fight and risk our lives for it. Okay. All right. Compelling. I'm not opposed to the American Revolution. It turned out okay. I'm not going to go back 240 years, almost 250 years. Wow, almost 250 years. In 26, we'll have our what do you call it? Sesquidouble centennial. I don't know. 250 years, quarter of a millennium, manual. Anyway, we're going to have that, and we're going to talk about the American Revolution. And you know, again, not attacking the founding fathers. I get it. But remember that in Britain, they did have representation. Now, right? We always talk about the tyrant, King George III. And if you watch the Hamilton play, you know, he's this foppish, out-of-touch guy who just wants his colonies. he really wasn't quite the tyrant we thought he was, because he was not an absolute monarch. He was not a dictator. By that time, already the British Parliament had tremendous power, not absolute power. The king still had some power, but, you know, we got some absolute dictators today, you know, Vladimir Putin or Kim Jong-un, whatever, far, far worse than King George III ever was. Not that he was great. I'm not defending George. I'm just saying that the main complaint of the colonists was they were taxed without representation. In other words, other Brits could elect people to sit in the parliament, sit in the House of Commons, and have the power to say how their lives would be governed. And the American colonists didn't. And, you know, if you want to play counter history, it would be interesting to know what would happen if the British had just given the colonies a few seats, right? It wouldn't have been that hard to do. To give the colonies a few seats in the in the parliament. The folks in America had very low population. So it's just a few seats in parliament. It probably would have been okay. I think we're having trouble with my Facebook video, so I'm going to take a quick early break and return to this conversation right out on the other side of this break. So stay tuned, everybody. We'll be back in about 4 minutes.
Never confuse Mark Levine with right-winger Mark Levin. The second E stands for empathy, which the other Mark lacks. And now, the voice of reason in an unreasonable world, Mark Levine.
About, well, American history, this whole idea of give me liberty or give me death, this fiery rhetoric of the former Virginia governor, Patrick Henry, who basically said, if we can't be free, it's worth fighting over. I get it. Please don't call me unsympathetic to the patriots of the American Revolution or our founding fathers. But I have to say it's a little overwrought. The king was not an absolute dictator. The British did have representation in the parliament. And maybe if they'd just given a little representation to the 13 colonies, right, a tiny population compared to Great Britain, given us a few seats in parliament, we might still be part of Great Britain today. Think about it. We might even have national health care. In any case, they did fight. The British Parliament did not give us representation in the colonies. Tea Party, yada, 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 American Revolution. Okay. But this concept of liberty is certainly something that is part of our ethos. Again, a little overwrought. Actually, if you want give me liberty or give me death, let's talk about the Nat Turner slave rebellion, right? That's give me liberty or give me death, right? When the slaves rise up and risk their lives, and I think virtually all of them were killed, to get freedom, that's a lot more risky than what George Washington did. Yeah, I mean, he's heroic. He's crossing the Delaware. I get it. It's part of our ethos. When the slaves rose up and said, give me liberty or give me death, that was the choice. But it is part of our ethos. If you go to New Hampshire, you know that their slogan is live free or die. You could even see it on their license plates. And whenever Republicans in the Virginia House of Delegates say, you know, why can't we be free to discriminate against others? Why can't we be free to mistreat our workers? Why can't we be free to charge someone $1 an hour? Why can't we be free to just say we don't want black people or gay people to work for us? Freedom! We usually say freedom because we're mocking this true penchant for liberty that is real and genuine and mostly good in America. Because, as I have long argued, freedom, liberty, means the freedom to do what you want for yourself. It does not mean the freedom to harm others. It never, ever has. And that's a critical thing there, right? I've talked about with regard to religion, right? What is freedom of religion? Well, the right would argue freedom of religion is the freedom to say that I don't let gay people eat cake in my shop. That's your idea of freedom? Freedom is my ability to say that those two people I don't know in Nebraska can't get married. I've never met them. I don't know if they love each other, but I'm going to forcibly tear apart their families. Freedom! Well, that may be your religious tenet. But the moment you impose a religion on other people, that may feel good for you, but it doesn't feel so good for those other people now, does it? If we truly believe in both freedom of religion and equality under the law, then the same freedom has to apply to everyone. And so your freedom to practice religion has to end where my freedom to practice religion begins. Right? There's that old saying, you can throw your hands away, you know, and do the crazy dance you want. I can throw my fists around. That's freedom. That's liberty. That's legal. But if your face is this close to my fist, my freedom is circumscribed. I can't hit you. Same is true with religion, right? If I want to keep kosher, I should be allowed to keep kosher, but I shouldn't be allowed to force you to keep kosher. If I want to wear a head covering or a hijab or any religious garment or a cross or a Jewish star, no problem. But I can't force you to wear it because that violates your religious freedom. Well, if it's true with religion, if religion can be a shield but not a sword, if I should be allowed to pray, but I shouldn't be allowed to force you to pray, how much more is that true with regard to life itself? I mean, my liberty, we can have a long argument, and this one gets tough and complex over whether suicide should be legal or not. Should you be allowed to kill yourself? Should you be allowed to harm yourself with drugs? I find those to be tough arguments, I must admit, because there is an argument that if you're sane and you want to harm yourself, if you want to cut off your own arm because, I don't know, you're weird, sorry, arm cutters of America, I think you're weird if you want to cut off your own arm. But should you be allowed to harm yourself is a tough moral question for me, at least. Should you be allowed to harm others? I find that to be the easiest moral question in the world. The answer is no. You have no right, no ethical right, no moral right, no legal right to harm others. If you knowingly and intentionally gave the coronavirus to someone else and they died, that's the equivalent of murder, right? Now, please don't misunderstand me. 99.99999% of the time, people are spreading coronavirus unintentionally, and that's really sad. And then sometimes people infect their own family members and they die. And obviously that wasn't intentional. Big difference between killing someone intentionally and not. Although you can also kill someone negligently. I've talked about the fact that because of Donald Trump's negligent handling of America's tests, he has killed, I think it's 47,000 Americans now is the current death count. But certainly intentionally harming someone is you can't do that. And I think most people get that. I think that's mostly something people understand. So when someone says, give me liberty or give me death, in the context of a revolution, it makes perfect sense. Perfect sense, right? And you may not choose liberty. I mean, the good people of Hong Kong risking their lives to fight today against the Chinese government are risking their lives. They are saying, give me liberty or give me death. And a bunch of them are being rounded up right now. We hardly are noticing it. The same is true with revolutions in Syria. I would hope the people of Russia would one day overthrow their dictator, Vladimir Putin. But, you know, they're risking their lives. It's not me. I'm not risking my life to overthrow Vladimir Putin. So I value as heroes the ones that will, but I can't disrespect their choice to stay safe. This ain't that. This is not a battle for democracy. This is not a battle for representative government. This is a battle to get your hair cut, to get a tattoo, to go bowling. Give me bowling or give me death doesn't quite have the same resonance, maybe, as a political slogan. And yet the Georgia governor, you may remember the Georgia governor. He's the one who rigged the election that he won. Remember him? He beat Stacey Abrams, Brian Kemp. What he did was he was the Secretary of State of Georgia, so he just removed all the black people from the rolls, which used to be illegal under the Federal Voting Rights Act and still is, except that our Supreme Court said that there's no more racism anymore, so don't worry about it. We're going to allow Jim Crow laws again. And But by removing the blacks from the voting rolls and preventing them from voting and rigging the election, Brian Kemp won, and now he's going to send people to their deaths because they want to go bowling. Now, who's dying in the COVID crisis? Well, mostly elderly people, mostly vulnerable people, mostly people in nursing homes. Blacks are dying at a greater rate than whites, Latinos. Why is that? Does the virus know race? Of course not. But our essential workers tend to be African American and Latino because they tend to be poor. And poor people, we just found out, to the surprise of the conservatives, it turns out that the poor people are more essential than the rich people. They're the ones bringing us our food. They're the ones working the grocery store. They're the ones working, bringing food from trucks and working in the manufacturing plants and getting us our goodies on Amazon. And yes, serving in the medical capacity, not just the doctors, who aren't generally poor, but the nurses and the nurse practitioners and the people, the orderlies, emptying the bedpans, which are full of very dangerous virus, along with the other gross things you normally find in a bedpan. Turns out they're more essential than we are, those of us complaining that we can't go bowling or get our hair done because we have to sit at home. Because if we go outside, we might just kill a bunch of people, and killing the liberals think is wrong. So yes, blacks, Latinos, they're getting the virus more than others. Really, it's not blacks and Latinos, it's poor people. Poor people, working class people are getting the virus more than those of us who have the privilege of sitting behind our computers and complaining on Zoom to each other. But you know who also is getting the virus more? Trump is. Recent study shows, and I posted it on my Facebook page, that if you watch Sean Hannity a lot, you're more likely to die these days. Because you believe this whole thing is a hoax. Because after all, our president's been downplaying it now for a couple months. When we come back after the break, I'm going to play for you segment after segment. You've probably heard them all before. Maybe not every one of them. Of Donald Trump playing down the virus. So the Trumpists are not just killing the minorities that don't vote for Donald Trump. They're killing themselves as well. Where does this idea, this wonderful American idea of give me liberty or give me death, where did it go wrong? When did people finally start to believe that they could have liberty and death? That they, by being free, would be willing to risk their lives and the lives of others? Why would anyone want liberty and death? It's a fair question, and we have to delve into the psychological mind of the Trumpist. We'll do that after the break. This is Mark Levine.
Back to the Aggressive Progressive, Mark Levine.
Talk about why it is that mostly on the right, some on the left, but mostly folks on the right, mostly Trump supporters, are so anxious to relax the stay-at-home orders, the social distancing orders that have been put in by governors all across the United States, more Democrats than Republicans. And don't get me wrong, there are Republican governors like Mike DeWine of Ohio that have been done very good with social distancing. But as a pattern, you tend to find the Democrats doing more than the Republicans and the Republicans resisting it more than Democrats. What's going on here? Part of it is, yeah, it's our American history. It's give me liberty or give me death, live free or die, that kind of rhetoric. But a lot of that rhetoric is astroturf. It's very rich people trying to encourage poor, middle-class, working-class people, the Trumpists, as it were, the people who believe this rhetoric and generally suffer the most from it, to get out there and to protest. And it actually, the movement is quite small. Even the majority of Republicans recognize the need for social distancing now. Ironically, those that listen to Sean Hannity, as I pointed out, as a recent study has come out, are more likely to die from coronavirus. In fact, there was a guy in Ohio that was known as the coronavirus denier. He put all over his Facebook posts BS. He didn't use those words. He wrote what BS stands for. And this was all a hoax, and this was all a lie. And this was, you know, completely the liberal media and the Democrats putting forth this ridiculous lie of a virus. And as you may have heard, he just died a couple days ago of the coronavirus, which apparently didn't see through the irony and killed this 60-year-old man anyway. Why would people believe this? Well, again, part of it is this history. Give me liberty, give me death. Part of it, you know, the whole mystique of the Confederacy, right? The freedom. We want the freedom to have slaves. Right? How dare those Yankees oppress us and keep us from oppressing others? Think about that. That's what the South was fighting for. This rebel notion. We're rebellious. We in the South. We wave our rebel flags. We're bad boys. We don't do what the federal government wants us to do. We want the freedom to deny other people their freedom. That's the thing I find most interesting about all of this. Because as I say, when you want freedom for yourself, that's one thing, right? Freedom to dance how you wish, pray how you wish, freedom to marry whomever you want, freedom to even do stupid things sometimes, like gambling and smoking and drinking. You know, I defend a lot of those freedoms. I'm a libertarian when it comes to personal freedom. But freedom to harm others is never a freedom. Sorry, Confederacy. I know you think you were fighting for your freedom. But once it comes to the freedom to oppress other people's freedom, then ain't your freedom. That's other people's freedom. The freedom of religion. I want to have the freedom to deny gay people their freedom. That's part of my religion. Well, you know what? Teach that if you like. But the moment you act upon it, you're taking away their freedom. It's not that hard to understand unless you're so completely selfish and so completely self-centered that all you can think of is yourself. You see, I guess there's two ways, two moralities out there. I can go back. This is much older than the United States. I can go back to the ancient Jewish rabbi Hillel, predated Jesus by about a couple hundred years. Many things Jesus says, actually, first came from Hillel. Hillel said, if I am not for myself, who will be for me? And that makes sense. You got to stand up for yourself. If you don't stand up for yourself, no one will stand up for you. You've got to protect your own freedom and liberty. So far, Democrats and Republicans agree. But the second part of his statement was, if I am only for myself, what am I? If I am not for myself, who will be for me? But if I am only for myself, what am I? The clear implication is you're not much of a human being if you don't have compassion for others. And the third was, if not now, when? Action, not just words. But I would argue that the Republican morality is entirely self-centered. The conservative morality, partly for those of us who've done some reading on this, you know, Ayn Rand, the cultural hero of the right, the author whom Paul Ryan used to give out her book. And, you know, her book, Atlas Shrugged, that's a 1,084-page book. I've read it. How many of those fit in a box? But Ayn Rand talked about the virtue of selfishness, that if all of us don't give a damn about anyone else and have no compassion, no empathy for others, and let others die, all those weaklings will die, and we, the superior, will live. And I get it. I get it. It's easy to have, well, not easy, because I think most humans have compassion, but it's easy to explain logically the morality of selfishness. If something helps me, it's good. If it hurts me, it's bad. It's a very simplistic notion. Probably most two-year-olds have similar ethics, although I've seen two-year-olds give their toys away to others. So some two-year-olds are obviously more sophisticated than the vast majority of Republicans who believe this nonsense. But again, The Virtue of Selfishness, read Ayn Rand. It's 1,084 pages telling you the same thing. Do what helps you. Don't give a damn about others. Others are others, after all. Kurt Vonnegut writes a story about how we don't know that maybe we exist, but everyone else is an android, is a plot, the Matrix, right? It could all be in our own mind. Same idea, right? You know you exist and you think you have free will, and I know I exist and I think I have free will. But it takes a little bit of a leap of faith for me to believe that you are an independent human being. Maybe this is all a dream. Maybe this is all a movie in my head. Maybe I should only do what makes me feel good and I don't give a damn about anyone else. Conservative morality. Easy to explain. Easy to understand. Liberal morality goes a bit further. Liberal morality says that other people matter too. In fact, other people matter equally to us. And if you look at the rhetoric of our founders, right? All men are created equal. They didn't include women. They didn't include slaves. But you get the point. All men are created equal. The idea that all of us are equal one to the other, that we should all have equal rights under the law, that's a higher order of morality. It's actually what all the religions teach. All the main ones. All the, I know. Judaism, Christianity, Islam, Buddhism, Hinduism. The idea that we should respect one another. The golden rule. Do unto others as we would have them do unto us. That suggests that all of us have this equal moral worth. I strongly believe in that. I think most liberals do too. And all of this is intertwined in this whole argument about the coronavirus, right? If you think it's all about you and the whole world revolves around you and only you matter, then yeah, you want to get your hair cut, damn it. And you want to get a tattoo. And you're very glad that the Georgia governor opened up tattoo parlors and haircuts and bowling alleys. And you're also an idiot. Because even if you don't give a damn about all those innocent people you're infecting and possibly killing, you're also infecting yourself. It's not give me liberty or give me death. It's give me liberty and give me death. When you go to that tattoo parlor, I think you have to be within 6 feet. I don't think you want someone doing a tattoo with a 6-foot-1-inch needle. That might hurt. The design may not be that accurate. Do you really want someone cutting your hair from 7 feet away? And bowling! Bowling! Great. Let's all stick our same 3 fingers in the same balls and wear the same shoes. That's got to be hygienic. But people aren't thinking clearly. One of the people in the comment section on my Facebook page said, Mark, yeah, but that's just a bunch of rhetoric. Well, what are the Republicans in the Virginia House of Delegates? They're not saying that, are they? Well, yes, they are. Two of them recently, Ryan McDougal and Bill Stanley, both Republican senators, have filed a lawsuit on behalf of Gold's Gym, insisting that the gym be open, that the gym is as essential as food and health care. I don't think it is. I like a gym as much as anyone. I probably need to work out a little bit more. But, you know, folks, you can do push-ups. You can do sit-ups. I don't think movies are essential. I don't think bowling alleys are essential. I don't think gyms are essential. And I think it's hard to keep social distance in a gym. But they, these Republicans are suing the Virginia governor to open up the gyms. Why would anyone have that? Who, you might say, again, the guy on the internet telling me, Mark, no one actually says all this. Who could possibly be so close-minded as to have no compassion for anyone else, is to only think of themselves, to have this weird distorted vision of morality that you say is the morality of a 2-year-old and you admit that many 2-year-olds don't have, to say that only care about what makes me feel good, I don't give a damn about anyone else. There aren't really people like that much in the world, are they? To which, of course, I point to Exhibit A. I'll give you a hint. He's got orange skin and a bad haircut. Donald Trump is the classic narcissist. He is the classic first order of morality. I only care about me. I don't give a damn about anyone else. He doesn't even give a damn about his family. I mean, you know, how many times did he cheat on his 3 wives? And he cheated on each one while he cheated on the other one. And all the women he sexually harassed because he feels like they're his property. He can grab them by their private parts if he wants. And it doesn't matter if they're little children, if they're girls in dressing gowns and he bought them, and Miss Teen USA, he gets to ogle them and fondle them. And talk about white privilege. Talk about privilege. The idea that he can just do whatever he wants because it feels good. Donald Trump wants to fill up a woman. He gets to do it. It doesn't matter how she feels. It's his freedom. It's his freedom to assault others. Just like it's his freedom to steal from poor people. His freedom to, you know, cheat people at Trump University and Trump vodkas and Trump steaks and the time that he ordered 80 pianos and basically refused to pay. He's all about this virtue of selfishness. But the Trump cult is too. The Trump cult is all about selfishness. It's all about, I want to get my hair cut. Now, I'm not talking about people that are advocating on behalf of people who are actually struggling. We call those people Democrats. People like Nancy Pelosi who are arguing that, hey, people are losing their jobs. And they need to be protected from eviction. And they got high rents. And they've got to be able to get their paychecks. Democrats are fighting for those people. No one disputes that it's quite harmful for someone struggling paycheck to paycheck to survive. And we're trying to raise minimum wage. We're trying to get them what the care they need. That's a different argument. I'm talking about the people who want their bowling alleys and their gyms and their beauty parlors. Those people. Those are the people that are listening to Donald Trump. And when he denies that the virus is that important, is that big a deal, they're going to believe him because they don't want to believe in something that will restrict their freedom. And I'm not against bowling alleys and beauty parlors and parades. I think they're wonderful things, unless they can kill you. And then I switch sides because I'm against death. And I don't think this is give me liberty or give me death. I think it's a little bit of liberty and a lot of death. Donald Trump has been playing on this crisis for 2 months. I want to play for you some of the things he said about it after the break and go over how it is that people can get in this mindset where when they listen to Donald Trump and they listen to Sean Hannity, they too often end up dead. Mark Levine, I'll be right back right after this.
He's a Harvard economist and a Yale lawyer. He does not keep up with the Kardashians. He's Mark Levine. And now, the voice of reason in an unreasonable world, Mark Levine.
Mitch McConnell famously said just the other day, let the states go bankrupt. Let them go bankrupt. The states that are frankly working when Donald Trump's federal government is not working to provide the basic things people need to live, everything from food, shelter, schools, disease prevention, right now, testing. I mean, all the things the federal government isn't doing. He just wants the states to go bankrupt. They're the only functioning parts of our government. Thank God we have the 50 states when our federal government is out to lunch. But among the states, we are seeing differences, right? The Georgia governor wants to open it up, the bowling alleys and the tattoo parlors. Gavin Newsom of California very smartly shut down his very large state early. And guess what? The largest state in the United States, California, has a very low number, particularly per capita, of coronavirus. But we also find it's true within the states. I mentioned that yesterday in Virginia, as a state legislator, I went down to cast votes on the Virginia budget. They were hard votes to cast. Frankly, we had to cut a lot of things that I strongly believe in, raises for teachers and police officers and public education and a number of wonderful health programs. And we had to cut them all because of this virus. But while I was there, I mentioned there were a bunch of protesters going around, honking their horns, trying to disrupt our proceedings. They want to be free. Hey, I'm glad they were socially distant in their cars, because had they marched as some protesters have done, they would have spread the coronavirus and killed themselves and others, spreading the virus, which particularly ends up harming the elderly. But we had a big fight in the legislature yesterday, and I'm going to condemn not just the Republicans, but the Democrats too, who opposed our governor's plan to move elections. See, we have elections scheduled for May. May 5th in Virginia, around the corner in just 2 weeks. We got elections a lot of the time in Virginia. These are local elections. They don't affect me, my seat. They don't affect Congress or the Senator. This affects your local mayor, city council, something like that, school board. They're important. Local governments matter. In fact, a lot of times it's at the local level where you find the most responsive government. Sometimes you do, sometimes you don't. But these elections are in May, and our governor suggested we move them to November. Because you may not have heard, there's a virus going on, a plague. And I talked about Wisconsin, where people risked their lives to vote. And sadly, many gave their lives to vote. Give me liberty or give me death. The people of Wisconsin chose liberty. They actually elected a Democrat in the Supreme Court, and many of them died for it. We know of at least 7 deaths directly related to the Wisconsin election, including poll workers. Well, now in Virginia, the House of Delegates in which I sit voted, frankly, I helped save that vote, voted to move the elections to November. Move the elections to November. When hopefully a lot of this will be over, we're going to have a presidential election anyway, we will save some lives. And the Republicans disagreed. 2-1, they all voted to have those elections 2 weeks from now. And sadly, some Democrats in the Virginia Senate agreed with them. And so it didn't happen. We're going to have an election in Virginia in May. And some people are going to die because of the stupidity of our elected leaders. And they should be ashamed of themselves, whatever party they're in. We don't have the mail-in ballots, the structure in place. We actually put forward new laws that don't go into effect until July. And so people are going to die because of some people's weird notion of liberty. Now, no one supports democracy more than I do. If you've heard my show for the last 15 years, I talk about it constantly. This is a 1-in-100-year thing, a pandemic. And no, I don't want Donald Trump postponing November elections. He can't, by the way. We can in Virginia. He can't. That's constitutional. That's federal law. My point is this. Until we develop a system whereby people can safely, legally vote, you shouldn't have to risk your life to go to the polls. Yesterday, we voted that our legislature would be able to meet remotely in the future so we didn't have to risk our lives in order to legislate. And the Republicans in our body voted no. The Democrats are in power. They will force us to risk our lives if we want to continue exercising that power. And to which I say, give me liberty or give me death.